And welcome to the Generations Radio broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson, homeschool father of five, raising our children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado during the demise of Western civilization, the breakdown of faith, family, and freedom, and the breakdown of economies. Economies are not what they used to be, and I think a lot of us are getting used to that idea. Friends, it's different today in the market than it used to be. You can't just have a college degree and assume that your child is going to make it out there in the market with just the sheepskin. That's not the way it is, especially since the Great Recession of 2009. And friends, it looks to me like we're headed back into recession in the year 2013. At least that's what the prognosticators are telling us. So that means that the economy is not going to be as friendly, as easy, as nice to our homeschool graduates or to our conventional school graduates as it used to be. That's why people like myself, homeschool fathers and mothers, are concerned about this, and we are trying to get out of the box and to understand the market and to understand the economies out there so that we can properly prepare our children for the macroeconomic system that they will face in the generations to come. Well, friends, to talk about this issue with me is Danny Craig, who has worked for College Plus for quite some time. He's regional admissions director for College Plus. And if any of you do not know what College Plus is, we're going to ask what that is with Danny Craig, who's the expert today on the program. Hey, Danny, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. It's a privilege to join you today.
Danny, talk to us just for a second about College Plus. I know that College Plus has tried to get out of the box a little bit on a college education. What does College Plus do?
Yeah, College Plus is a program that was founded, interestingly enough, by three homeschool graduates. And basically the story is this. A gentleman by the name of Brad Bowler finished up his homeschool education and wanted to head to the mission field and realized that to go with a particular missionary program that he wanted to go with, college degree was required. Well, he looked at the stats, looked at the time it was going to take, the money it was going to take, and basically decided, hey, look, I do not want to spend tens of thousands of dollars in going into debt plus, you know, 4, 5, 6 years for a college degree when all I really want to do is, you know, go fulfill the Great Commission and be a missionary. So he decided, I think there's a better way, and did some research and found a way to complete his accredited bachelor's degree in about 6 months for around $5,000. His parents wisely said, hey, you might be onto something, Brad, and he wrote a book, started a program called College Plus, and the idea is to help students complete a degree without the burden of debt, the waste of time.
And how many students have been through that, do you think, Danny, over the years?
And we've got about 3,000 students currently.
Okay.
That's the current enrollment, and obviously a good enough number more than that over the years.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a program that probably needs to double and triple in size over the years because these brick and mortars are getting more expensive. And and things have changed since 1980 when I was in college. I mean, how do you think they've changed?
First of all, you mentioned 1980. I was just looking at some stats recently with costs.
Okay.
Get this. Higher education costs, we think of medical costs as being this, you know, sector of the economy that's just inflating out of control. Higher education costs are actually inflating twice as fast as medical costs, up 1,200% since 1980. So you have some major, major issues going on with costs getting out of control to where students simply can't afford the degree.
Okay.
Then on the flip side of that, you have really diminishing returns. So you have increasing costs, diminishing returns to where employers are saying, hey, yeah, it's nice to have a college degree, but what we're really looking for are some skills like problem solving, communication skills, collaboration skills that in most cases college just isn't preparing you for.
In other words, it's not preparing you for real life. It's out there on the island of education. You have people with sterile uniforms and masks working on you. But you're really not in real life, and you probably have very little ability to take whatever knowledge you've learned and apply it in the marketplace. I mean, that's a whole different deal. That's a different animal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, there's quite a bit of writing going on about this right now. Last year, a book was written called Academically Adrift, and this statistic that I'm about to give you was quoted both in Newsweek and Time within the last couple of months. 45% of students show no significant improvement in the key majors of critical thinking, complex reasoning, and writing by the end of their sophomore year in college.
Wow. Meaning after 2 years, 45% no progress.
Exactly.
That's pretty sad.
Exactly.
Because they spent $20,000 for that.
At least.
That's a ripoff. That's a ripoff.
In fact, I was doing a presentation about some of these realities just a couple of months ago. And I was about to give the presentation. I was talking to a homeschool dad who was sitting in the front row before I gave the presentation. I said, hey, look, you're an employer. You're an accountant working at an accounting firm. You're looking for new hirees. What are the things you look for? He says, well, actually, you know, a degree is helpful, but what we're really looking for are people that can think critically, can problem solve, and communicate. I'm thinking to myself, man, you need to hear the statistic. And what he said completely validated what these researchers are finding. It's pretty true across the board.
Wow. Well, how do we solve the problem? I mean, what do we do? I mean, College Plus says, okay, let's cut the costs and cut some of the time involved in getting the sheepskin, getting that piece of paper. But at the same time, you want to get ready for life. You want to be useful and relevant to the marketplace out there. How does that happen, Danny?
So this is an interesting question, and I think that as we look at all the problems of higher education, we're tempted to think that the solution's got to be this major, grandiose solution that's going to require billions of federal dollars. Here's how we approached it as a family. We basically went through our homeschool journey, and then as we hit, age 18, the question comes up, so what's a great family going to do for college? You know, you get the crazy questions like, you guys can actually homeschool through college and do something as odd as that. And so we began to think about, okay, what are the principles that led us to pursue the homeschooling style of education in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
That independent, directed by parents as mentors, what are the principles that made that style of education work ages 1 through 18? And can we carry those principles past age 18? And see, the thing is I talk with hundreds of families across the country, and we have this idea that all of a sudden those principles that made that style of education work, if I could call it a mentor-driven style of education work ages 1 through 18, we think that all of a sudden once you hit 18, those principles go out the window. When in reality, I think that's just when those principles are going to give you the biggest bang for your buck. When we really need to kick those principles in full bore is when we're throwing them out, usually to go to college.
Uh-huh. And college doesn't provide a lot of that.
Yeah, there's not a lot of mentorship going on. What I usually describe college as is regurgitation education. Basically, you show up in the classroom,
okay. You
listen to a lecture for about 60 minutes, you put everything you learned on a sheet of notes, and you show up 2 weeks later for the exam, you put your notes back on a piece of paper, and that's your education. What you don't have is a lot of integration between the book learning that goes on inside the classroom and what's needed for real life outside the classroom. In fact, you have major corporations coming to institutions, top-tier institutions, saying, hey, look, the people that you're churning out of your education system aren't what we're looking for anymore, because the system was designed back towards, hundreds of years ago, and they were looking for workers that would basically be suited for the factory-based system, not innovators like we need today in today's technology age, where information is changing very rapidly, where the marketplace is changing very rapidly. Kids today simply cannot keep up because they're not trained to be critical thinkers. They're not given the knowledge that they can apply to real life in an effective, quick way, which will lead to success as innovators in the current economy, which is really what's required for success.
Danny, even when I was in mechanical engineering, I got into high-volume manufacturing operations during the 1980s and 1990s. I will tell you, graduating from college, I was pretty useless in my first job before I got into some of the remedial classes provided by the companies that hired you. I mean, that's what they do with new hires. They knew that new hires were worthless. They knew that. So they gave you a bunch of classes in remedial CAD design, experimental, statistical processes, and other things that we had not taken or we had not really learned about in order to apply to the real-life area of high-volume design and manufacturing. We had learned some things. We had learned some basic principles of sorts, but we had no idea how to actually apply it to the field or the industry that we were working in. So these companies would provide probably, $30,000, $40,000 worth of education to their hirees, and hopefully that would provide something. But now I think companies can't afford that. They're at the point where, they're not going to be spoon feeding and giving you remedial education, they're just going to be hiring people who have the experience and people they can count on. And this is what I'm hearing. A lot of our graduates are having a hard time getting into the market because the market is requiring experience on the front end. And so here's the big question. How do we get our people into the marketplace? How do we get them, how do we merge them into the macro economy when they've been on the island for, you know, 18 years out of their lives or 22 years out of their lives learning outside of the family economy or outside of the macro economy? And I think that's the issue that we're dealing with. And I think a lot of homeschoolers could profit from this because they're working very, very hard to get their kids into the macro economy by means of family economics. And of course, we've been pushing that for the last 5 years and continue to push it. And that thing's just growing like crazy. But we also want to find ways in which they can sort of get mentored into some of their own economic endeavors as well. And so that's really, I think, what we're after here. Let me take a break here, Danny. We're going to come back to talk about mentorship because that's really where I want to go on this edition of the program. I also have Chad Roach in a studio with me because we want to talk about how young people can learn and get involved in the economy and mentorship. And that next on the Generations Broadcast. Be back in just a moment, friends.
Folks, with this radio program, we're bringing relationships and truth back to a lost and lonely world. That's why we advocate homeschooling, mentorship, family-based economics, and a biblical worldview, all as part of our homeschool ministry based in Colorado. For homeschooling seminars, curriculum, and encouragement, visit our website at chec.org. That's check.org on the web. For apprenticeship, mentorship, and entrepreneurship training for your children and your family, you need to hook up with our AME program at ameprogram.com. That's ameprogram.com. You know, the Generations Radio program is a ministry of generations with vision, where we work hard to cast a vision for the next generation through each and every radio broadcast. Tune in online at generationsradio.org for the daily show, the blog, and the online store. That's generationsradio.org.
Back on the Generations Broadcast, Kevin Swanson, your host, with you. A couple young men on in studio on phone line with me. Chad Roach, somebody I've been mentoring for a number of years, and he's basically mentoring others as well. So he's sort of on his own and doing very well. Thank you very much. Thanks be to God for the blessings that he has given to Chad. And also Danny Craig is Regional Admissions Director for College Plus. And we're talking about how to get our young people into the macroeconomy where they have a job, they're making some money. Hopefully they've got some entrepreneurial endeavors. They've got, we're hoping, some kind of family economic ventures going as well. Danny, how do we get these young people into the market and how do we make them successful?
Sure. I think that part of it comes with realizing that we're not the only ones facing this difficulty of getting kids into the marketplace. We tend to look at college and beginning whatever we think of as real life with this deer in the headlights look, and we think that, hey man, we've just got to jump into the system to be able to do what everybody else is doing in the system. But the reality is only 51% of students who receive bachelor's degrees from 2006 to 2011 are even working full time. So
no way.
Exactly.
Wow, they're not even working full time after a college degree?
After a college degree. And get this, starting salaries are on average about $27,000 according to Rutgers.
Give me a break. $27,000 a year? I mean, they could have started 6 years ago working for Starbucks and done better than that.
Yeah, we have a little bit of a cultural expectation that I think we even as homeschoolers have largely bought into, which says if you want to be successful in life, you have to have a college degree.
Yeah.
And I think we're getting to the place where we see with the cost that we discussed and the diminishing returns that we're just discussing now, that there is a new reality. But here's the thing. I think it's exciting because I think it's a little bit of a wake-up call for us as homeschoolers to continue the vision past age 18, and that's what I want to go to answer your question.
Yeah.
We're talking about how we can actually, you know, beat the system, as it were. The deal is this. My experience is that when you take the kinds of education that we're at least to some extent pursuing ages 1 through 18 and move that past age 18, there's some real significant potential. Part of it is that we think that going to college is going to, you know, give you this amazing perspective on life and going to help you figure out what all your dreams are and how you're going to accomplish those. When in reality, it's actually doing real life and getting experience that opens up the horizons and that gives you a bigger perspective on life.
I hope that most people understand that spending $30,000, $80,000 to get a college degree to graduate making $26,000 a year is a ripoff, and it's going to take a very, very long time to recoup the costs. I hope people understand that college alone is not going to work, and that's why I like actually the title of the name of your organization, College Plus, because really that's all we're saying is you need something besides and beyond college to make this thing work.
Exactly, and part of it, though, is that we get, Kevin, into this age range, 17, 18, 19, where we put ourselves in a situation where we have very little experience, and we think that college is the only solution. So what I think we're looking at with a lot of students and with young men and young women is that, hey, you have an opportunity with a homeschool style of education to where you do not need to sit in this, you know, process in life where you're still kind of not really engaging in real life experiences. In other words, if kids at 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18 can begin to catch a vision for life and can begin to get outside of the books and apply some of that knowledge to real life experiences, whether it's, you know, around the house, whether it's working with dad some, whether it's being more involved in household management, if we can begin to break outside of the school hours, we won't get to this point at age 18 where we think, hey, college is the only solution to my son getting a job, because we'll have 4, 5, 6 years of experience where our sons and daughters are already having an opportunity to be involved in different work opportunities, and so we won't feel like there's this huge necessity to jump into the college system.
Chad, you had a comment to make about this vision for life. You think that your average kid going to JC, junior college, is getting that vision?
Not always. Uh-huh. I think inbred into the assumption that people go into college with is that college will answer the basic question of what should I be doing? Whereas in reality, usually best case, college helps you figure out how to do it. That's even questionable enough as it is. But in most cases, I think young people will go to 17, 18, 19 years old with absolutely no idea what they want to do. They haven't tried a cotton picking thing. They have no idea what they might possibly be good at, what they might possibly enjoy, where their talents, their gifts, and their calling is. And they go into college expecting that the college experience will somehow answer and help, you know, give some deliverable on that question. And in many cases, they're changing majors so fast, they have no idea which way's up till they're out the other side.
Uh-huh. Yeah, how do they figure that thing out? How do they figure that out?
Most of them don't. 70 to 80% of kids get out of college and end up doing something completely different than the area of their major after they've changed their major an average of 2 to 4 times. So they're not figuring it out.
Yeah.
Figuring it out in life eventually.
Which means this all brings us back to get out there, get your feet wet, please get in the water, get involved, do something. Just do something. Please do something. Get out there, do something, please. And preferably do it in the market, and it would be really cool if you had a mentor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote an article recently for Homeschool Magazine entitled 4 Secrets for Aspiring Entrepreneurs. And entrepreneurship is this, you know, in many people's minds, nebulous concept, and most 14, 15, 16-year-olds aren't thinking about becoming entrepreneurs at least very quickly. But entrepreneurship at its basic roots is basically the idea of taking ownership, taking responsibility, and taking some initiative. And I think that any 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old can do that. It involves being willing to ask some questions, being humble enough to find the people around you that know something more than you do, which is going to be pretty much everybody. It involves taking them out to breakfast, saying, hey, what were your successes? What were the things that you wish you had done differently? What advice would you have for me as a young man or a young woman starting out in life? Getting some wisdom, getting some real life ideas from people who have been in the field. The second thing, though, is that you have to get past your own shadow and start to be able to see the needs of others. And that's something that in our culture is so saturated with self-centered media, we really have a tough time doing. We have a tough time saying, hey, what are the needs around me? How can I serve? Who has something that needs, who has something that, you know, needs to be fixed, or what are the different projects around the house? Just to keep it really simple, dad, mom, what do you need done around the place? Taking ownership of projects is the root of successful entrepreneurship. So, if we can then take the advice from others that we're learning through our question asking, we can be successful in those mini projects and get that real life experience you're talking about.
Somebody said, if you want to be like somebody, hang out with somebody. And by the way, that is pretty much what Jesus said when he said the disciple would be like his master. And so if you want to be like somebody's mature Christian, hang out with a mature Christian. If you want to be like an engineer or a really good engineer, hang out with a really good engineer. If you want to be one of the best doctors in the world, it would be really nice to hang out with the best doctor in the world. If you'd like to be a millionaire, go find a millionaire, hang out with him. It's really, really, really simple, folks. It's really simple. I mean, really simple. However, and this is where I want to go on this interview right now, Danny and Chad, how do you be a good apprentice or mentee in that mentorship-apprenticeship relationship? How does that happen? How do you pull it off? How do you, you know, hang out with that millionaire and really make it work? In other words, it's one thing to say, okay, I get it. I need to go out there and find a good manager of an operation and hang out with him so I can be a good manager someday. I want to be a president of a $100 billion company, so I'm going to mentor with a $100 billion company. Okay, you got the mentorship. You're with the millionaire. You're hanging out with him. You got it. I mean, maybe you had to pay for it. Maybe your parents had to write a check for $48,000. Instead of going to college, you decide to write a check, $48,000 to a millionaire, so your kid can hang out with this millionaire for 3 years. Now, but here's the question. That's you're not done yet. You still got to go hang out with him. But, you know, you could be a bad apprentice, right? You could really fail at it. I mean, your folks write the $48,000 check. You go hang out with a millionaire. You work with him. You learn a few things from him. But how do you be a good mentee or a good apprentice in that relationship? That's where I really want to go here, Danny. You first.
I think that first comes down to humility, and something that we often as young people really struggle with. I know that it's a huge battle for me. But the basic idea of humility is that you realize that you are dependent on God, and by implication, you're dependent on others for advice and instruction. That's a huge theme. It's a huge theme in the book of Proverbs, mm-hmm. where we see that over and over and over, young men, sons, are encouraged to seek the wisdom and instruction of others.
Yeah.
And so I think it starts out with a heart attitude that says, you know what, most everybody else around me knows a whole lot more than I do. Secondly, I could learn from them, and I'm going to take the time to sacrifice whatever is most important to me, my pleasures, whatever it is, my Facebook time, my Twitter time, and actually hang out with people that know more than I do so that I can learn from them. And I think that part of it is that we have to realize that this process of getting a good mentorship and being a good mentee is only going to work if it's an enjoyable process and it's a decent process for the mentor as well.
Gotcha.
And if we go out to breakfast with this guy and look at him with this, you know, tan face, it's not going to work very well. We're going to have to take the initiative to ask the questions and to really seek out the wisdom.
You've got
to
lean into it.
Foundational thing. Yep.
You've got to lean into it. And Danny, you got some really decent mentorship. You did. I think you mentioned that to me off air. Talk to me about what you learned about mentorship.
Sure. I was 20 years of age and hired for the sales position, which my sales experience basically consisted of selling about 100 ounces of silver on Craigslist and making $15. So I was totally clueless, totally clueless.
Right.
And I called up my brother's father-in-law, a gentleman by the name of Steve Riddell, and he's the chief operating officer of Blinds.com, largest online blinds retailer. And I said, hey, Steve, I need some help. I'm totally clueless. He said, okay, here's a couple of assignments. We had a first conversation. He said, I want you to write out some basic questions that you would ask on a sales call. he didn't call me back. I had to pursue the relationship, but it was worth pursuing because every time we talked, he gave me some amazing nuggets of knowledge that were exactly what I needed to know for my particular type of sales job. I would get on the call, apply those nuggets, I'd record the call, send the call to Steve, and say, hey, Steve, can you listen to this? Yeah, he would say, okay, sure. I'd set up a time to talk with him again, taking the initiative to have that conversation. He would chew me up, spit me out, and I had to get back on the phone call and apply what he learned. Now, here's what was exhilarating to him. See, there has to be some amount of value that you deliver to the mentor for this to work.
Right.
And that can either be free labor, but one of the values that you can deliver is the exhilaration to them that what they've taught you is actually being applied and used in real life. You see, mentors, people that have experience, there's a lot of them that just want to have a little bit of a legacy and have a little bit of a protege that can carry on the things, who can carry on the things that they've discovered. So it's not only pulling out the wisdom, but it's applying it and giving them the reward of knowing that you're actually using what they're teaching you.
And the amazing thing is there are probably millions of potential mentors in America that would love the experience. I think the onus is upon the apprentices. I really do. I really think it's them to go out there, have some initiative, sit down for lunch or breakfast with three or four of the best possible mentors they could possibly find, the field of interest they're interested in, and, you know, bring out the questions, ask for a commitment, and present themselves as one who really, really wants to learn and sit at the feet of the masters. And if they do, they're probably going to be received pretty well in that and receive a great mentorship. Let me ask Chad Roach, who's in studio right now. Chad, you've had experience on both sides of this. You have mentored. You have been apprentice in my organization with me. What have you learned?
In order to make it work, you've got to listen, you've got to learn, and you've got to try, and you've got to try hard. You got to have your ears wide open, and you've got to be watching, and as you see it done in front of you, you've got to give it a shot yourself. The process of learning real life isn't too much different than learning how to swim. You're going to go down to the pool, you're going to watch the guy who's swimming there, and you're going to jump in the water yourself, and you're going to give it a shot. So you can't be afraid to jump in the water, you can't be afraid to try, you can't be afraid to fail. You've got to constantly apply the things that you see in front of you, and you've got to be humble enough to ask those questions. But I'll tell you, I think Danny was onto something. If you are willing to honor the men who are mentoring you, those mentors who are coming into your life and giving you that experience that they've gathered over 10, 20, 30, 40 or more years, they're going to respond. There are few men, there are few experts out there that with a willing, honest, and sincere young person asking for experience and crying out for wisdom, it's the promise of Scripture that if you cry out to wisdom, you will receive it. And I think that that is one of the most overlooked principles that young people in business miss today, is the amount of information, wisdom, and experience that can be obtained for absolutely free just with an honest, humble, an honoring spirit and asking for it. And I've experienced it over three different industry types. You will find someone, no matter what your industry, that will be willing to help you and help get you a leg up if you are willing to ask.
In the face of the failure of the present systems, man, I would think that people would be willing to actually step out and do this kind of stuff. You know, I mean, think about, you know, 51% aren't even in their own field yet after spending $80,000 in a college degree. And they're only making $26,000 a year at 26 years of age. You'd think that somebody out there would say, there's got to be a better way. Maybe this mentorship idea is really good and I should try this.
And working hard and asking for help is free.
It's free.
And
you don't have to spend $68,000 on it.
For the most part. I mean, maybe there's somebody out there that say, I'll give it to you for $48,000.
Still a good deal.
And it actually produces something. By the time I got to the end of my college age years, I had in the bank what most people had in the red.
Yeah. Yeah.
Danny? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think to piggyback off of that, my experience was it's fairly simple, but it's not easy, and you have to apply it. You have to be willing to get some bruises and bumps. What's not going to work is doing this mentorship process that looks a lot like the classroom where you're just compiling these books of notes. That's not going to work. You have to have an integration of the learning, the expertise from the mentor, and a simultaneous application of that to real life. You know, ideally, you'd have a mentorship situation where the mentor says, "Hey, you know, I appreciate that you're, you know, learning from me. Hey, come by my office for a couple hours and help me with this paperwork." Ideally, that would be the kind of situation. But you're going to have to get some real life application, or it's not going to work.
Ladies and gentlemen, these young men aren't going to say it, but they're two of the most successful young men that I know in America today. And they've got some, I think, some great words of wisdom. They've actually been through some decent mentorships and have submitted to it, and they'll learn something about mentorship. I hope this has been helpful for those of you who are tuning into the program. I guess the moral of the story is the book of Proverbs is right. It works. It's a good book. It's a really good book. Get into the book of Proverbs. It's amazing. You know, you kind of finally stumble back to the microphone and say, I think the book of Proverbs is a really good idea.
Solomon was onto something.
I think he was.
Wasn't he like the wisest guy? I don't know. What's that?
Really smart. Definitely really smart. Yeah. Okay. Danny Craig's got a great organization, folks. Check it out, collegeplus.com. Also would recommend our Proverbs Bible study guides. We've put a lot of work into this for families to raise their children. In the book of Proverbs, be sure you use the core curriculum every day as you sit in the house, as you walk by the way, as you rise up, as you lie down. That is the Bible. And specifically, the book of Proverbs was written for young Christian boys and girls to prepare for life. It's a great book. Get into it. And our Bible study guide is available at our website, kevinswanson.com. Hey, guys, thanks so much for joining us on Generations. Man, it's been good.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
And folks, for more information on College Plus, it's collegeplus.org. That's collegeplus.org. And you can get our resources at generationswithvision.com or kevinswanson.com. And by the way, if you'd like to interact with the radio program, call into the show at 877-520-9510. That's 877-520-9510. If you're interested in interacting with the radio program, we will air your comments and questions at 877-520-9510. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.